A number of people have been in touch with us about a story we touched on about kangaroo plagues and how one farmer was resisting the urge to control and let nature take its course. Stuart McKenzie's family has been on Plevna Downs near Erromanga in southwest Queensland for more than 70 years, and he believes roo plagues are most likely a man-made phenomena. Ecologist Ewan Ritchie is convinced that Stuart's on the right track, but Ewan sees dingoes as the best solution to the problem. I began by asking Stuart to describe what things are like on his property.
Cameron, it's not as bad as what it's been in the past, and there's possibly a reason for that, for what we've changed here, but across the region generally, it's not just this year, it's been a constant now for many, many years, and it seems to become at its worst when the drier it gets, it seems to congregate them and of course as your pastures get more and more threatened, the roos have more impact. So.
So what are you actually seeing on the property?
Look, here where I am, we actually are seeing, there's quite a number, but it's not plague proportions that we've had in the past. A lot of areas, we're on towards the far west of Queensland. Further east, they are in plague proportions, and you know, thousands and thousands of roos in particular areas. So yeah, on us, they're moving, and there's still a lot of them, but they're not as bad as they are in areas to our east.
What types of kangaroos are you seeing? What species?
Predominantly red here, the red species. So
they're the big ones, aren't they?
The two species, the reds and the greys, predominantly we get out here, and I'm not talking about the colour of the fur, it's the actual species, because a red species is actually grey coloured often. But yeah, they stand up taller than the greys, and we're on open grass country, and which has always been the domain of the red roos, and the grey roos tend to live in the more timbered country further to our east.
So that hasn't changed too much over the years that you've been on the property?
Yes, there was a change. Back in, going back 5-6 years now, the grey, there's a massive intermingling of those species. So the greys actually moved out into this open country, which was unusual, and the reds moved back into the timbered country, and they just sort of exacerbated the problem as far as population explosions go, I suppose, having species living in areas where they don't normally live.
Okay, so you've still got quite a few on your property at the moment, given the seasonal conditions, but you did mention there that further east they're even worse. Let's just hear from Tambo, from a farmer at Tambo now. That must be, what, maybe 400 kilometres or so from you, is it, Stuart?
A little bit more, about 400 or 500, yeah.
400 or 500, that'd be the northeast. So yep. Mick Seymour is from Tambo, and he's saying that the kangaroos are costing him about a third of his income at the moment, and he's counted thousands on his property.
Well, the biggest problem, I had a paddock close to a yard there. It's all improved, blade ploughed, buffalo and sorghum. It was 2,500 acres, and because of my cattle, I got a long trip from up here down there. I thought I'd lock it up, and there was no cattle, just for an easy place to give them a bit of a blow after they got there. And, mate, the kangaroos moved. Once you take cattle out of a paddock down there, the kangaroos move in, and they ate that out within a couple of weeks. Ate it out to nothing.
Can you give us an estimation of what you think the kangaroos are costing you in terms of the kind of amount of pasture that they're eating?
Well, it's quite easy to work out the rate. It'd be about a third. That accounts for a third of the pasture eaten on a property, which is way beyond natural habitat. And, I mean, you take a third away of production country, which money has been spent to plough and seed and everything else. It's a third of income gone.
So what kind of things are you doing to mitigate the roo numbers on your property?
Well, at present I'm not doing anything because I don't believe in just wasting them, going out and shooting them, because one, it's time-consuming and you're looking at, a dollar odd a bullet and the time that affects, and I don't think you'd have much of an impact on it. They'll just move in.
Mick, you were saying that some of your neighbours have vermin fencing. Are you considering that as an option to controlling the roo problem?
We're thinking very deeply of it. It's about $4,000 a kilometre to do it. And, I mean, today with the returns we're getting for cattle and everything else, you've got to wonder how long it can be viable for.
Tough situation for Mick Seymour there, who's at Tambo, speaking to Lydia Burton. My guests on Bush Telegraph are Stuart McKenzie, and I'll come to you and Richie, ecologist, in just a moment. Stuart, are you hearing similar stories to that from Mick?
Yeah, very much so, Cameron. Once to have heard of and what he's talking about, the cluster fencing that's been happening where people are actually building predominantly dog-proof fencing, but it's also kangaroo fencing around their properties, so either clusters or individual properties. And one area I heard of was 30,000 acres, and they've already shot 17,000 roos out of that area and 46 dingoes, to give you an idea of the sort of populations that, and they haven't finished, so to give you an idea of the sort of populations that are in some of this country.
Serious numbers. So do you see them when you're out and about driving? Are you having to dodge them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing we're doing differently, I suppose, or what I'm seeing here, is that the population are getting back to what I saw that I can still remember sort of 40 years ago, where they were actually lived in mobs, individual mobs, and those mobs were separate as such. There wasn't just a mass swarm of kangaroos wherever you went, which is still happening in a lot of places. So I'm sort of hopeful that what we're doing is actually having an effect and getting them. I firmly believe, I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I firmly believe that native populations shouldn't naturally get into the overpopulations to the point where they just starve. Not only that they starve and die, but they also completely decimate the natural pastures. So the pastures that they rely on for feed, to the point where I've seen them, you know, digging out the roots of our Mitchell grass plants and destroying a plant that can survive for 50 years or more, which is what they survive on. To me, that goes against the laws of nature. So there's something completely out of balance here.
Yeah, let's find out from a scientist. Dr. Ewan Ritchie's an ecologist at Deakin University. Ewan, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, good morning, Cameron. How are you?
Good. What's going on here? Why are the numbers so great?
Yeah, well, I think Stuart just nailed on the head that the system's out of balance. And I think when we're talking about herbivore populations, there's really two very important things that limit herbivores. One, of course, is food, and that, you know, is grass, and that's affected by rainfall. We've just come off a few good years of rainfall, and obviously now in parts of Queensland we're now back in drought. But the other thing that limits, of course, herbivores is things that eat them, and that's things like dingoes. And so we've got a huge problem in Australia with overabundant herbivores, whether they be kangaroos, whether they be goats, even things like pigs. And what we do know from many parts of Australia now is where we get on top of kangaroo populations, it's usually through dingoes. So I think there's a whole range of issues that we need to think quite carefully now about trying to get on top of kangaroo numbers and actually stopping these booms from occurring, as Stuart just said.
But how many kangaroos can your average dingo take out? It can't be that many.
Well, that's a very interesting question, and it's quite important when we think about it also in terms of kangaroo shooting, because kangaroo shooting, of course, you're targeting the larger males because they have more meat and therefore they're worth a bit more. And you're obviously getting more bang for buck, excuse the pun. But when you're a dingo, of course, they typically are going for the females because they're smaller and they're easier to kill, basically. And if you want to limit a kangaroo population, the quickest way to reduce the kangaroo population is to kill the females, not the males. And that's what dingoes do. So they do a couple of things. Of course, they eat the females, but they also actually cause kangaroos to avoid those areas. If you're a kangaroo and you're hopping around, you all of a sudden start seeing dingoes, you're less likely to actually move into those paddocks and graze there. So dingoes can actually reduce herbivore numbers quite considerably in a number of ways.
Stuart, how close are you to the dingo fence?
We're right on it. It's actually on to north and south and east of our north, south and west, sorry, of our property. So we've had that dog fence there for whenever it was put up, 30s, I think, or 40s, 1940s, so it's been here for a long time. So we've been inside it for the 77 years that my family's been on this property.
Which means that's changed the dingo activity in the area, clearly.
Yeah, well, interesting the comments by you, and totally agree with the bucks. I mean, what we've done here, we haven't had a roo-shooter here now for 5 years, and my theory, as a kid, I remember, as I was saying before, I remember the does at all be in one mob with one buck, one big buck, and I'm talking massive animals, and they're getting up to that size again now, and the bucks would all be on their own, like the half size, they'd congregate in their own mobs, and to me that showed obviously some sort of breeding control. So you had your main buck was looking after his mob of does, and that probably was putting some control on the breeding. Shooting, of course, as Ewan said, takes out the the large ones because they have weight limits and they're trying to get as much meat as possible. And it'd be like the
that's
human
that's shooting,
population.
That's shooting for harvesting, is it, rather than for pest control that you're talking about?
That's now? For harvesting, that's yeah. right. So you can constantly take those large males out, and what we were left with was, if you use the comparison with the human population, it'd be like taking everyone out over 20, and you imagine what would happen as far as the breeding and the controls go, and there would be no sort of controls, I would imagine. So, but interestingly, as far as the dingo is concerned, there's no doubt they have an impact, but we've controlled our dingoes for 70-odd years, and the roo populations have still changed dramatically, and I'm putting that down to the predominantly the shooting of the alpha males.
But if the when you're shooting under with damage mitigation permits, so that's for vermin control, you wouldn't just necessarily aim for the biggest.
No, that takes everything. But to give you an example, we've done that a couple of times. One was in 1980, another one was in 2002, and we shot in excess or up towards 10,000 kangaroos of every size and shape off a basically a 100,000 or 150,000 acre area, and had no negligible effect. They just kept coming in. So once they get to plague proportions, which is what happens when people start taking out pest mitigation permits, they really are so, the populations are that large that they have very little effect.
Ewan, would you agree with that?
Yeah, look, I mean, as I said before, the kangaroo population is booming. We've come up with a couple of really big rainfall years, and we don't have anything that's really limiting those kangaroo numbers, that is dingoes. So they can increase dramatically. And as Stuart's saying, you know, you can go and shoot, you know, thousands of kangaroos in a property, but bear in mind, some of these properties are massive. We're talking about properties that are larger than most capital cities in a lot of cases. And you know, most people are only actually obviously shooting from roads or very close to roads where there's access. And there's large areas, therefore, that are not being accessed where kangaroos can just, you know, come back in from. So you're doing very little when you go out and shoot hundreds of, you know, kangaroos in a paddock when you're talking about the size of some of these properties.
How much science is there to back up Stuart's view that you disrupt the mob structure? Is that the correct term?
Yeah, look, that's a really interesting question, and I don't think we have very good information about that to answer that. I mean, there's no question that the large males definitely basically beat up and bully the smaller males and they leave the females alone. I'm not sure whether that actually changes the population size, because you know, what we do know from kangaroos is you don't need many males to do the job, so to speak. So, you know, one male or a few males is probably enough to get most of the females pregnant.
But this is a similar argument that you hear when it comes to wild dogs sometimes, targeted
shooting.
Well, there's
a couple of different things going on there. So in case of kangaroos, I think what potentially is going on is, of course, we're shooting all the large males, and that just makes more room available for females. There's more feed for the females, and you end up with a female-biased population. Now, in the case of dingoes, they're really interesting because you can still have dingoes in an area with kangaroos, but they're destabilised. So we've baited and we've shot dingoes out from huge areas, and basically what we've ended up with is very young dingoes, sort of 2 years of age or younger, who don't know very much about how to hunt, and so they target things like calves and sheep, and less so kangaroos. And so it gives a false impression that dingoes can't control kangaroos, but what we do know is where dingo packs are stable and have been left alone, they do a very good job of bringing kangaroo numbers right down.
But for the immediate problem at hand for graziers in Queensland, what options do they have then if you don't believe shooting's the answer?
I think there's a range of solutions. And I think, you know, you mentioned fencing before. And I think fencing is a really, you know, it's a solution at a small scale, but there's huge maintenance costs involved in erecting fences and making sure that kangaroos don't punch holes in them and then you're back to where you started.
And Mick Seymour pointed out many people on the land at the moment are not in a position to fund that.
No, so I don't think fences are going to be a great solution at a large scale. But I think there's a couple of things. You know, we can actually support farmers to use things like guardian animals, which can have two benefits. They can actually keep dingoes away from your livestock, but there's also pretty good evidence they might actually deter kangaroos. And we should also be looking at actually allowing dingoes to come back into some areas. I mean, obviously sheep country, that's not really an option because no one would argue that sheep and dingoes are going to mix
very
well.
Not a great mix.
But in cattle country, that's definitely an option. If you can reduce the impact on calves, and that can be done through, you know, fencing of particular areas or protecting the calves, you know, during that period. So there's a range of things that I think we could do much better to support graziers to reduce the impacts on livestock from dingoes, but also to get on top of kangaroo numbers and even goat numbers in parts of Australia as well.
Yeah, we haven't even touched on goats yet.
Exactly.
Stuart, what are the practical options for you? You've ruled out shooting.
Yeah, look, it's really, we're struggling to find it. I mean, the fencing is becoming more popular. It is very expensive, and as Ewan said, there's a pretty major maintenance issue as well. It is happening in some small areas where groups of properties are getting together and fencing off their area. Particularly for dogs, I mean, the sheep industry is in serious trouble up here as far as dogs go, and it is more viable in most places than cattle, especially at the moment. Sheep industry is quite profitable. It is a massive concern. The dogs, and we're not talking dingoes here, we're talking wild dogs, we're talking inbreds, crossbreds, etc. So, and they're actually coming from the east, they're not coming from where we are out in the west, where they're actually dingo purebreds out in the Cooper Creek country and that sort of thing. They're fine, those breeds, but to the west, the wild dog situation is just becoming worse east of us. As far as the roos, I honestly believe that there's two issues. There's the macropod harvesting is a very important industry for the smaller country towns in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've been pushing for, and some have been pushing for years, but why take the big bucks? Why not take the does? Because why not take the good eating animal, if you like, the younger animal with the more tender meat, which would change the whole the sort of way that's managed.
Yeah, but aren't the shooters trying to avoid animal welfare concerns there?
That's right. And
they don't want to shoot does.
Also, they don't get as much meat for your time. Mm. And they're having viability problems now, and they've obviously got major market problems as well. So I would really like to see the macropod industry thriving, but it doesn't actually have any impact on the roo populations. So we are finding on this property that not having any shooting, the kangaroo populations, as I said, are tending to get back into the old mob structure, and we have less of them. Now, I don't know. So I'd like to follow this up with you and maybe at a later time, but we've done it for 5 years now. I'm not prepared to say it's being a success, but I'm getting more and more hopeful as years go by because...
But you'd have to hold your nerve taking that strategy, Stuart, wouldn't you, while you're watching kangaroos eat out your pasture, to just think, we're just going to sit here.
We started from a low base because by the end of 2009 we'd had 9 years of particularly low rainfall, so a lot of them had died or moved anyway, so we're starting from there. But since then, we've had one wetter season on record, another very wet season following. We then had a real dry last year where you would have expected the populations to move in, and they didn't. So they're out there now, but they're certainly not in the droves that we've seen in the past. So, and other properties are doing the same thing, haven't had shooters, and by the sort of collapse of the macropod industry anyway, it's been forced on a lot of people. They just aren't throwing shooters around anymore because they haven't got the market. So it is happening in a natural sense anyway. So it will be interesting to see what develops over the next few years in that area.
We've had a similar story in the past of a property in near the Territory South Australian border where they're allowing dingoes to re-establish in their traditional pack structure, if you like, or the traditional numbers. I guess the same argument there. And I know it's quite controversial. Ewan, how hard do you think it is to convince farmers and graziers to go down the path that Stuart's taken?
Oh, look, it's particularly difficult, and I think we've got to do a much better job of supporting people to do that. So we've got to look at different solutions. So I think that the problem is we're stuck in this vicious cycle. We control dingoes, and then we get more wild dogs and more hybridisation, and there's no question they can impact livestock. But what we do know, again, is when you leave dingoes alone, they'll keep those kangaroo numbers down for you. So we're in this vicious cycle where we basically bait and we shoot dingoes, and then we end up with the dogs that we don't want, and then we end up with more kangaroos, and we just continue the cycle over and over again.
So, is it because we look at each pest animal individually?
Absolutely. So people often refer to what's called integrated pest management. So what that means is basically that when we look at whether it be a paddock, whether it be a national park, species are interacting with each other. So when you take out dingoes, of course, you may have more cats and more foxes and more kangaroos. So what we need to start doing is actually managing all species together. And that can be done, but again, it needs to be prioritised. So I think there's really, big potential wins if we can actually sort of move past, I think, a polarised view that dingoes are always bad or dingoes are always good, and actually start bringing in some new technologies as well and new approaches such as guardian animals, fences at small scales, I think, potentially, yes. I agree completely with Stuart that if we can have a viable kangaroo industry, that'll make a big difference as well.
Ecologist Ewan Ritchie, You also heard there from Stuart McKenzie, whose family at Plevna Downs in the southwest of Queensland have been on the property about 70 years. Interesting discussion, isn't it? What's best way to control roo numbers?